You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
What a Radio City Music Hall, the Museum of Modern Art, the U.S. Embassies in London and New Delhi, the campus at SUNY Albany, and the Kennedy Center for Performing Arts all have in common? The architect, Edward Durrell Stone. In a new biography, his son Hicks Stone argues that although his father was responsible for some of our most iconic buildings, his work has been largely misunderstood. The book, Edward Durrell Stone, A Son's Untold Story of a Legendary Architect, is published by Rizzoli, and I'm very pleased to welcome Hicks Stone to our show today. Hello.
Hello.
And this is an oddly shaped book for a biography because it's both an art book and in the large format size and a biography.
Exactly so.
How did you think of it initially, as one or the other, or is it? It's not a monograph.
Well, I think inevitably because there's a large story to be told that it has to be principally text. So fewer pictures, but mostly text.
You write that this book grew out of a desire to not only inform the world about your father, but also to understand him for yourself. What didn't you understand?
Well, as you may have read, Dad was he was a wonderful person, but a somewhat detached father, loving but very busy with his practice. So I knew him only casually.
And then he passed away when you were still fairly young, your early 20s?
I was 23 when he died.
Mm-hmm. Were you already planning to become an architect?
You know, I wasn't. In fact, Dad wanted me in his practice in the worst way, and he did everything he could to encourage me. I worked in his office for one summer, which was a bit of a disaster. And ultimately, I think he just resigned himself to the fact that I wasn't going to be an architect, and, you know, who knew what Hicks would end up being. But almost within a matter of weeks after he died in August 78, I started working. I'd already graduated from college at that point. I started working on picking up additional credits so I could apply to architecture school, and a year later I was in Harvard at the Graduate School of Design.
It's interesting that you're referring to him as Dad. In the book, he's always Stone.
Well, you know, I suppose I wanted to assume a level of detachment because I thought that was important. If you also notice, I never refer to myself as Hicks or I, never in the first person. It's always Stone's young son. Because I felt that kind of neutrality was important.
You write that as an architecture student, and even today, you find yourself the object of criticism or judgment when you mention that he was your father.
Oh, it's inevitable.
So you have to defend him all the time?
You know, I don't come to his defense. It's not like anyone just goes directly into an ad hominem attack, but you'll see the raised eyebrows or the kind of barely suppressed sneers. And really, as recently as just a visit to a graduate school in Arkansas where Dad had been a student, I was sitting with the dean and I could see that he was just barely suppressing his desire to ridicule Dad.
Now, why do you think that is? Some of your father's buildings are among the most our favorites.
Sure.
It's kind of like, are we talking about the Museum of Modern Art or Radio City Music Hall, or is it because of the Huntington-Hartford Museum that they have that scorn?
Exactly. Well, you know, Dad was one of the early exponents of European modernism in this country. Really, only a handful of architects, along with Dad, like George Howe or Richard Neutra, were practicing this new international-style modernism.
Which, by the way, started in America, didn't it, with someone like Louis Sullivan, then went to Europe and
well, that's an interesting point. I suppose Sullivan and Wright influenced European modernists. In fact, you're quite right, they did.
And then later Raymond Hood goes to Europe and brings it back to America.
That's right. And so Dad was part of this group of messianic advocates of international-style modernism, people like Philip Johnson as well. But at some point before the war, he met Frank Lloyd Wright and was so moved by Wright's architecture and its attitude towards nature and also its attitude towards warmth and scale that his practice completely transformed itself.
So he became a postmodernist before there was postmodernism?
Well, much later on, of course, he did. In fact, Robert Stern, And another historian, Jane Merkel, feel that the Huntington Harford is probably a proto-postmodernist work.
More recently, the whole exterior of that building has been redone.
Sure.
And, I'm sure you weren't pleased by that.
Well, I privately wasn't pleased. I didn't want to make a public statement about it, but I think whatever you can say about that building, it was rhetorically strong. Dad's building took a strong position about what architecture should be. And, you know, with all due respect to the architect of the current museum, I don't think that's a rhetorically strong building. Mm-hmm. It makes a mild statement about architecture.
I guess the thing that strikes me strongest about Edward Durell Stone is how divisive he seems to be. People loved it or hated it.
Exactly.
There's that house on East, 64th Street?
64th Street between Park and Lex. Yeah.
Where he put a facade in front of a house that was very much like all the other houses on the block. And I remember walking down that street and having people say to me, I hate that, or isn't that fabulous?
Yep, it's true. Everyone was polarized. You know, you either loved him or you hated him. Very few people had neutral positions.
Well, you're kind of hard on him in this book, especially in regard to his personal life choices. But then you want to defend his professional life. What about the personal stuff? Your parents divorced.
Sure.
Was that a big issue in your life?
Did
you judge him?
The central issue. And, you know, unfortunately, at that age, children tend to see things in black and white terms. And so Dad was evil. My mother was a saint. How could he do that to her? Of course, now, with the span of decades, my attitudes have changed. They've softened.
How did your parents meet?
They met. It's a famous story. They met on a plane flight from New York to Paris in one of those old Stratocruisers. And Dad ultimately proposed to her on that flight just before they landed in Paris. At least that's how the story goes. So,
was he going there just as a tourist or as somebody who was interested in European architecture?
He was going there to spend a very boozy summer on a barge on the Seine. He'd probably come to what he felt was the end of the road. His work had dried up. He was drinking very, very heavily. And for two successive summers, he lived on a barge on the Seine.
Part of the other problem I think a lot of people have with him is that he represented establishment America, did those embassies and did the Kennedy Center, the kinds of buildings that represent America as this, the most powerful nation in the world.
Mm-hmm.
The one in London, loved and hated again. I don't know. What about the one in India? He really did go, was very interested in Asian architecture, wasn't he? Didn't he design a mosque in Pakistan?
Well, you know, actually, I think Dad went where the clients were. He used to quote, I believe it was Louis Sullivan, who said, get the job, get the job, get the job. That was, you know, wherever the clients were, that's where Dad followed. He actually did most of the government buildings in Islamabad, including the Presidential Palace and, controversially, the Pakistan Institute of Nuclear Science and Technology, ironically built under Eisenhower's Atoms for Peace program, but, of course, the site where Pakistan's nuclear scientists were trained to produce their devices. So,
what was his first real project as an architect?
His first project as an architect were two public rooms in the Waldorf Astoria Hotel. He'd met Leonard Schultz while he was traveling in Europe, and Schultz was one of the partners who were doing the Waldorf Astoria Hotel, Schultz and Weaver. And Dad did the starlight roof and the main lobby.
Do they still look the way he designed them?
Pretty much, except for interior decor like carpeting and, you know, chairs and so forth.
He was practically a novice when he got the opportunity to design the Radio City Music Hall and the Roxy Theater.
Oh.
How did he end up with those projects?
I mean, it's really quite...
Those are big projects.
I mean, it's breathtaking, really. I mean, as an architect, to think about the level of responsibility he was given at a very young age. He developed a friendship with Wallace Harrison, and Harrison was the lead architect on the project. And they became quite close over the years, and Harrison was the one who hired Dad to do the work.
Your mother told you a story about how he came up with the idea of the radiating arches in those buildings.
Exactly. I mean, there's a lot of conversation about how those arches were developed, but the story that I read, which was actually Dad's first wife, Orlean, who told it, was that he was passing a jewelry store in Manhattan, and he looked in the display window, and there was a ring was spotlighted, and the radiating pattern of light was essentially a series of receding arches, and he knelt down right on the sidewalk there and said, "I've got it, I've got it, I've got it." So,
but then he was fired from the project right before it was completed.
He was. I mean, how sad. I mean, at the
this is during the Depression.
Height of the Great Depression. He was fired on Christmas Eve, 1932, for accepting a commission from Vincent Astor for a house in Bermuda.
Why was that a bad thing?
The administrators of the architects on the project didn't want anyone moonlighting. I mean, most firms don't permit moonlighting, but, you know, they turn a blind eye, but not the Rockefeller Center design team.
Well, I associate him mostly with the big buildings, the big institutional buildings, but he designed a lot of houses.
He did.
Including the Mandel House.
Yep. That was a wonderful, starkly modern home up in Mount Kisco.
The first to use glass blocks.
That's right.
Did he have a special interest in employing innovative techniques or materials?
I think it probably came from his 2-year trip in Europe, where he was exposed to some revolutionary architecture and just brought the concepts back to the United States.
Now, how do we explain the fact that many of his most famous buildings are located overseas? Was he more appreciated outside of this country, or was he the architect that America sent to other places?
I think that comment is right on. He was the architect who America sent. I mean, at a point in his career, Dad would have considered to be one of the top two architects in the country, along with Eero Saarinen. And Eero Saarinen also did work overseas. In fact, as you know, Dad was on the front cover of Time magazine in March 1958.
And you were just a kid at the time?
I was 3 years old.
Was it weird growing up with a father whose face was recognized even though he was an architect?
It's a complex. You have a complex series of feelings about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, people did know who your father was. They weren't scornful then.
No, the scorn really came probably in the early 60s.
Would he have subscribed to any of the famous architectural dicta, form follows function or less is more?
He would have when he was an early modernist, of course. Those are fundamentally modernist principles. But as he began to turn his back on modernism and seek richness and warmth in architecture, he would have turned his back on those principles as well.
What are some of his best buildings in New York that listeners might be able to visit?
Well, there's, of course, the townhouse at 130 East 64th Street between Park and Lexington, which he did in the mid-1950s and where I lived as a young boy. The Museum of Modern Art, Radio City Music Hall.
Well, we have to try to remember the Museum of Modern Art before it was
expanded,
changed more recently.
Transformed. But the main facade still survives.
Mm-hmm. The Roxy is gone, but that was a fabulous theater.
Demolished in the 50s, yeah. There's a public high school on the west side. I couldn't tell you exactly the street, but I think it's in the west 60s. There's the remnants of the Huntington Hartford Museum, of course, which there's still an archaeological piece or two left. And the General Motors building right across from the plaza.
And many homes in Westchester and Long Island.
Absolutely.
And you can find them and many other wonderful buildings in this book that is biography and also architectural picture book. And we'll also find it on our website because we have a slideshow from this book at WNYC.org, our show page. The book is Edward Durrell Stone, A Son's Untold Story of a Legendary Architect, written by Hicks Stone and published by Rizzoli. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. It's been an honor.